So 4 years ago, my 22-year-old, dreadlocked, tattooed, I'm more of a Buddhist, hippie daughter, came into 2 tickets to Burning Man at the last minute. And she had always wanted to go. She'd never been. And she decided to ask her 53-year-old Army veteran Episcopal priest father to go with her, which, of course, was an offer I could not refuse. Now, I knew that I would have an interesting time, probably a fun time, but I didn't know that it would transform me. And I didn't know that it would open up all kinds of not only avenues for ministry, but a way for the church to learn how to be the church. And I'm about to leave on my 4th and most ambitious trip to Burning Man, and I want to tell you a little bit about this. One, so you can pray for me and know what's happening, but also because I think, you know, the church is struggling how to be the church right now. And I think my experience at Burning Man and the experience of other Episcopalians at Burning Man can help us learn some things that might be helpful. But let me, before I start, I can't assume that all of you know the craziness that is Burning Man. So let me do my best to give you a bit of information. Burning Man is a community. It is a worldwide community that gathers once a year in a very desolate, dry alkali lake bed in northern Nevada. It's about 2 hours north of Reno. 70,000 people show up. And for 9 days, we create a community of generosity and openness and caring and creativity and fun and playfulness and engagement. And it's also it's an art camp. Their artists work all year round to create beautiful art structures that are installed at Burning Man. And there's, you know, this beautiful figure of a 30-foot tall woman. There was one year a stained glass whale, this whale, beautiful stained glass whale. There was buried, like emerging from the sand, a head and 2 hands of a robot. And just all kinds of random art. And way out in the desert, there's this tiny little movie theater that plays classic movies and seats about 10 people. There's just all kinds of art. But a lot of the fun that happens at Burning Man happens because of camp. So one of the things that surprised me when I first went is the organization doesn't provide any of the entertainment. It's not like a music festival where they bill, you know, musicians. And the organization, all they provide is the man that gets burned at the end, the temple, and porta-potties. And the organization, you know, the layout of the land. All of the experience comes from camps. Oh, that's right, I forgot to tell you. It's a gift-giving economy. There's no money exchange, there's no bartering. People go expecting to give gifts. You know, and before they go, they think about what is a gift that I can offer the community. And they go expecting to receive gifts. And then many people affiliate in camps, and camps only exist for the purpose of providing an experience for other people, to offer a gift. And there are camps that offer, if anything you can think of, there's a camp that offers it at Burning Man. And a lot of them, there are a lot of food camps. You know, one of my favorites, my first year was a camp that provided fresh donut holes and coffee, you know, fresh brewed coffee and fresh made donut holes every morning. Andrea and I, when she went with me the next year, we found this like French cafe with a little cafe tables, and you know, people show up and they build that in a few days so that they can serve coffee and serve other people. And there are music camps and dance camps. There's one camp that people just sing Disney tunes all night long. There's another camp with just teddy bears, and you cuddle with teddy bears. There's trapeze camp, So if you want a trapeze, there are people there that will teach you how to trapeze. And like camps are a group of people saying, wouldn't it be fun if we did X? And then they work all year long to build a camp. There was one of my favorites, MASH Camp. MASH Camp has tents, like the TV show, like old army tents, like the TV show MASH. They have a bar, you know, and they're serving like drinks out of IVs and, you know, stuff like that. But then at night, all night long, they show episodes of MASH. So if you like overstimulated because you've been partying a little too hard, you know, you can go to MASH Camp and just relax with Hawkeye Pierce all night long. And you just, like, you walk down the street and you turn the corner like, oh my goodness, I can't, you know, there's this experience and it's all free. And you can imagine, like, if you put a year's worth of work into creating something, you're thrilled when someone walks into experience it. Right? So not only are you surprised there's this thing, but you walk into this thing and they're like, oh, great. How can we serve you? It's just mind-blowing, the amount of generosity and openness and creativity that is happening. Now, my daughter, once I said yes, she then felt some responsibility that I would have a good time, and she thought long and hard about like who we should camp with, and she goes to a lot of music festivals, or she did it then, and she would hang out with a group of young adults from Orange County that would go to these music festivals and, you know, stay up all night long dancing to electronic music, and several of them are DJs and, you know, doing substances, and like that was her group. So we stayed with them. The name of that camp was Camp Perky Parts. We stayed with Camp Perky Parts. And Camp Perky Parts, what we offered was we had a sound system, we had some DJs, we had a dance floor, we had a bar, and several times throughout the week we would throw parties and have people come and be a part of that. Now, I was going, I knew it was a gift-giving economy, and I then had the puzzle. And it's a puzzle I invite you to think about. I have the puzzle of what would I offer as my gift to people at Burning Man that would have integrity to who I was as a priest, that would really represent like me and what's important to me, that could be received by people who are church-phobic or have been wounded by the church, right? So I didn't want to be like too Jesus-y and like scare people or hurt people, but I also needed to have integrity. And so I was pondering like what I could do for my gift, and my daughter, who does not go to church, suggested that I sprinkle holy water. So I take aspergillium and I sprinkle holy water on people because that's both holy and fun. But then I thought, the next thing I thought was take a tub of communion wafers and bless them and then ride around on my bike passing out Jesus. But that just didn't seem like quite the right thing. And then what I landed on was a blessing. And so I would go up to people and just go up to them, and I usually wasn't wearing a collar, and I would just say, can I bless you? And they would say yes, because in Burning Man, like, you're open to receive gifts and open to the experience. So they would say yes, and then I would bless them. Now, I would like to show you the blessing that I created. And in order to do that, I need a volunteer. And this blessing includes being anointed. So I will, in this blessing, touch like parts of your body. Is there someone here that would be open to being joined? Okay.
Right here.
So this is what I would do. I would just go up to a random person and say, hi, can I bless you?
Yes.
I'm Brian.
I'm Joy.
Joy, it's great to meet you. And I have oil here that's been anointed and been blessed, and I'm going to anoint you in different parts of your body. Is that okay? Okay. Joy. The world now is too dangerous and too beautiful for anything but love. I bless your eyes so you see God in everyone. I bless your ears so you hear the cry of the poor I bless your lips so you speak nothing but the truth with love. I bless your hands so that everything you receive and everything you give is a sacrament. I bless your feet so you run to those who need you. And may your heart be so open, so set on fire, that your love, changes everything. Amen.
Amen.
Imagine getting to do that. Imagine getting to go up to stranger after stranger and just blessing them. And one of the lovely principles of Burning Man is no commodification. Nothing is a commodity. You're not doing anything to get anything back. So this had to be just a gift. It wasn't a gift to make the Episcopal Church cool or Jesus cool. It was just a gift. It was a blessing. And the number of people that fell into my arms sobbing, and particularly the number of young men who fell into my arms sobbing, it was a profound experience. Another thing about Burning Man is it's hard. It's 9 days away from everything, and you have to bring everything you need to survive. Your tent, your water, your food. It gets horribly hot during the day. You're on an alkali lake bed with this fine dust. So every day there's a whiteout dust storm for 2 or 3 hours. You have to have apparatus. You have to have something to help you breathe. It's just a hard environment, and you're up, like, not me, but other people are up all night long dancing and partying, and you're tired, and it's hot, and it's hard. I mean, it's hard, hard to be there. There's something crucible-y about it. Like, you know you're going to go there, and you know it's going to push you to your edge. So the people that go, even if they're planning on being on the party bus 80% of the time, they expect some encounter that's going to transform them. I mean, you could imagine if you're going on a 9-day retreat somewhere, that you expect something to happen. I remember I had a conversation with one young woman who had just graduated from college in Jerusalem, and she was going to Burning Man to sort of be open to figure out what is going to happen next in her life. And so because of that, people are expecting, like, they go to Burning Man, it's going to be hard, something's going to happen that's going to transform me, but I don't know quite what that is. And then they encounter a priest. And they encounter the church. The church maybe that they felt never had a place for them anymore, right, or wouldn't welcome them. And there they see out at Burning Man, which is their world, they see the church present, and they see a priest that's loving them and open and not asking anything in return. The conversations shift to God like that. The conversations they want to have but don't know where they can have happen at Burning Man. It shifts to God like that. So I had this experience. So I was blessing people, and that was really moving for me, as you could imagine. But at the same time, I was experiencing this community, and so much of what I was hoping the church would be, my whole ministry, I was experiencing there. It's this community of generosity and openness and love. And I was standing in line at a camp called Naked Crepes, and I did not know what I would find there, but I was hungry, and I assumed it had something to do with crepes. So I went to this camp called Naked Crepes, and they served the most amazing crepes. And all of the cooks, they have this like cook tent with you know, a bunch of burners and a U, and all of the cooks are running around wearing nothing but long black aprons. So it's like these naked butts, all these naked butts running around, which was just adorable. So I'm standing in line for my Naked Crepe with this guy named Brooke, who was a retired venture capitalist, and was really wise, and he was like telling me these things. And one of the things he said was, I never realized how much energy I expend judging other people until I came to Burning Man. And I realized, I then like looked at myself and I was like, you know, here there's this place where the ethos, like one of the rules is non-judgment. The ethos is non-judgment, and you're flooded with so many things that you could judge. Like whatever you're judgy about, you will find it there, right? You know, like that person should not be in a thong. You know, whatever it is, right? Or, you know, crepes should not be naked, or whatever you're judgy about, you're going to encounter it in a place where the air, the ethos is saying don't judge. And you do that, and I look at myself, and I'm like, I'm not being judgy. And I expend so much energy going through my daily life being judgy. And that happened on Thursday of my week. And that's when I realized that I was on my own spiritual retreat. And that I was encountering a kind of community. Now, it's 9 days. And I know, like, it's artificial. We can't be that good to each other for more than 9 days. But that 9-day experience sort of let me feel what we're trying to be as the church and as the human family. So I had that experience of being in my own spiritual retreat. And then I came back. I came back on a Saturday night because we got the tickets at the last minute. I still had to preach on Sunday during Burning Man. So I came back early, came back on Saturday night, and then Sunday morning I got in the pulpit to tell the congregation of Trinity Cathedral about my experience at Burning Man, and they were dying to hear. Because they sent me, when I told them just a few weeks earlier that I was going to Burning Man, the congregation rallied to help me get everything I needed, including there was a grandmother in the choir who sent me a text message with a picture attached. And the text message was, Brian, I don't know if you have your tutu yet for Tutu Tuesday, but Michael's is having a sale. And then she sent me a photograph of the tutus at Michael's, right? So the congregation was all on board, sending me onto this crazy adventure, and they were dying to hear. So I got in the pulpit, and I preached a sermon about Burning Man, and all of my sermons at Trinity Cathedral were videotaped and went online. And that one, within a few weeks, was watched over 20,000 times by burners all over the world. And I started getting emails from burners all over the world. And by the time the next Burning Man happened, it was over 30,000 people had watched this sermon. And part of it was, you know, here's the church affirming what they're doing. Another part of it was they finally had something they could show their mothers. Right? Mom, watch this sermon. This is why I go. But because of that, a couple of things happened. One was I became known. So at the next Burning Man, 70,000 people go to Burning Man, 30,000 views of the sermon, not every night, it doesn't correlate, but a lot of people that went the next year saw this sermon. And when my camp, Camp Perky Parts, was having their Purple for Prince party that next year, my job was to be a hyper, which was to stand out on the street with a megaphone saying, you know, perk up your parts at Perky Parts, we're having, you know, a Purple for Prince party. And I'm, of course, wearing my purple cassock because cathedrals, you wear purple cassock. So I'm wearing my purple cassock, and which is like the priestiest garb I have. And during a 45-minute period, 7 people who were riding down the street stopped and said, are you the priest? And I said, yes, I am. And can you pray with me or whatever? But in a 45-minute period, 7 random people coming down the street stopped and wanted to engage with me. The other thing that happened was Episcopalians who go to Burning Man heard of the sermon, watched it, and then contacted me. So these Episcopalians that didn't know each other now had a way to get connected. And then the next year, my second burn, we did one Holy Eucharist at the temple at Burning Man. And the temple, we'll talk about the temple at Burning Man at another sermon. But we did one Holy Eucharist at the temple. Now, after this Eucharist, we had about 30 people. 15 were part of the group and showed up, and another 15 were just passing by. So we had about 30 people at this Holy Eucharist. When it was over, we couldn't leave because people kept walking by, and they would see the chalice and the paten, and they would come over and want to be prayed for or want to be blessed. And it was as if anyone had any point of contact or frame of reference for what that chalice and paten meant. Like they went to church as a kid or whatever. They saw it at Burning Man, their home, and they wanted to connect with it. I had one woman leaving the temple saying, I just left my son's ashes at the temple, and I'm concerned about whether or not my other son is going to make it. Can I have communion? The other thing that happened after that service was something that has never happened to me after celebrating Mass. For 27 years of celebrating Mass, this has never, ever happened. And that was five different people came up to us and said, that was amazing. Are you doing this every day? Can you imagine, like, finishing this and then coming back going, that was amazing. Are you doing this again tomorrow? And we, you know, we said no because we didn't have the bandwidth, we didn't have a plan, you know, all of that stuff. We said no, and I didn't have a camp. I mean, we didn't have like an Episcopal camp that they could go to. But we had that experience, and what I was hearing from all of these people is they're hungry and they want what the church has to offer, but the church for so long has not looked like Jesus that they're not coming here for it. But to see, to encounter the gospel in their home, affirming their values and not judging them, they were hungry for it. So the next year, our the leaders of this group, the Episcopalians and Burning Man group, none of us got tickets until the last minute, so we were only able to pull off planning two Eucharists. So last year, we planned two Eucharists, and we also did a burial at the temple as part of one of them. But this year we're doing something very ambitious. Remember I said that the activities at Burning Man all come from camps. So we are going to have the first Episcopal, I'm assuming it's the first, Episcopal theme camp at Burning Man. And at this camp, we're going to have morning prayer every morning at 10 a.m. We're going to have office hours every day. We're calling it Sacred Space from 2 to 4. And that's an opportunity where people know that there'll be someone there most of the time, but they can be guaranteed that there'll be someone there from 2 to 4 every day to pray with them for confession, for blessing, for conversation. We're going to have a rosary-making station so they can there's something fun to do and something that they can take home with them. We're creating a dome, a geodesic dome chapel. And then we're also going to have our living room, which is where our sort of hangout space. And what that part of what that, oh, and then we're doing four services at the temple. And one of them is a memorial service on Friday. One of them, at the end of Burning Man, they burn the man. And then the next night, they burn the temple. Last year, we harvested the ashes from the burning of the man and the burning of the temple. And this year, on Wednesday, we're going to do Ash Wednesday service. And we're going to do an imposition of the ashes with the ashes that we got from the previous year. And Burning Man, one of the identities of Burning Man is with the dust. It's a very dusty place. And first-year burners, when you first arrive, they ask you to roll in the dust, and you sort of embrace the dust because you're going to get covered in dust. So to say to people, remember you are dust, and to dust you shall return. You know, there's a double entendre of our own tradition of what that means, but also from the Burning Man ethos of what that means. So we're going to have these four Eucharists, but we're also going to have a home so that if someone connects with us and wants, and we'll have cards with our address on it, 245 and A, and the name of our camp, which is not Episcopal appropriate, so I'm not going to tell you what it is. We're going to have cards with that on it, and they know where to contact us and when we're open and that kind of thing. And this... So this is our first time. This is a huge venture for us to create an Episcopal camp, theme camp. It's a Christian theme camp. It's not. We have a Roman Catholic and a Lutheran as part of the eight people that are going to be housed at this camp. We have a bunch of others who are involved in our ministry, but they're already affiliated with other camps. But this is, I mean, this is a new big venture for us. And I think it's really important. I think that's where the church needs to be. And I think what we're doing there can help inform our ministry here. As we encounter people who are spiritually hungry and hungry for what the church has to offer. I think this is vitally important, what we're doing. Not just offering something at Burning Man, but also to bring back and educate the church about how to be the church outside the church. Because Burning Man is not the only place where spiritually hungry people are showing up. Now, I leave Thursday. Actually, I leave Wednesday for Thursday. And I'm going to be gone for a little over a week. And it's important. I need you to pray for me. I want you to pray for me. I need you to pray for me. I need you to pray for our camp. Pray for our ministry. Pray that we, stay well, healthy. Pray for the people at Burning Man. But I also, when Andrea deployed to Afghanistan as an Army chaplain, she was working at Faith Church in Cameron Park, and she asked Faith Church to look at what she was doing in Afghanistan as an extension of their ministry. And I want to do the same thing here. Not that this is anything like deploying to Afghanistan, but I want you to look at what we're doing there as an extension of your ministry. You are sending me there to bless and be Jesus as best I can as an extension of this congregation. And so I want you to look at it that way, for you to see that this is like we're together doing this. It's not just me going off doing a crazy thing. But your prayers, your support, your love, your encouragement as I'm doing this is important. And it's important to me that you're there with me. So I'm inviting you to be in partnership unfortunately, I won't be back right afterwards to report because I'm gone 2 weekends and Andrea will be the preacher and celebrant those 2 weekends. And then her nephew is getting married in Dallas, so we're going to be there the following weekend. And then we have my 35th West Point reunion the following weekend. So I'll be gone 4 weekends in a row. Andrea will be gone 2 weekends in a row. So in a month, 5 weeks from now, I'll be back and I'll have a full report on all that happens, but please pray for me.